natural world has always held a fascination for people, and James Ryan's no different, but he has taken it one step further than many of his peers. The 12-year-old Cantabrian's written a book about it, focused on the tools animals carry with them that allow them to defend themselves and hunt their prey. It's called Nature's Wildlife Weapons, and it looks at the tusks, antlers, horns and claws of various creatures, some living, some extinct, and how they're used. James has been a regular at the Canterbury Museum for as long as he can remember, and he dedicates the book to the museum staff who helped him access some of their artefacts. Canterbury Museum's also hosting the book launch tomorrow as it coincides with its Fur, Fangs and Feathers exhibition, which showcases taxidermied animals from its collection. There are images on our website, rnz.co.nz/9tonoon. It's kia ora korua. Welcome to you both, to James Ryan and Dr. Paul Schofield, Senior Curator, Natural History at the Canterbury Museum. Morning, welcome.
Hello.
Kia ora koutou.
Wonderful to have you here. James, right, let's begin at the beginning. Your interest in the natural world and the journey that you've been on to bring you to this point.
Yeah, it's been a very, very long journey, but a very exciting one. And this is just like something that's the cherry on top.
To be publishing a book at any time, at any stage of life, is a huge achievement, and to be doing it now is incredible. Where did it begin for you? Do you live out in the country, James, and was this very hands-on, this interest for you?
Yes, the book initially started as a school project that I got really excited about, and then Bateman's book accepted it as a book for kids, and now it's in all good bookshops. But it started mainly when I was just a baby, like still in a pram. My mum and dad used to take me around the museum. And when I started to get older, I was looking a lot more at their collection, and I decided that I really wanted a collection like theirs. So I started collecting like fossils, feathers, shells, claws, and fallen deer antlers. And eventually, it just led to me writing a book.
Where did you find the stuff you've collected yourself?
A lot of it is field work. Like just last year, I was at a creek near Molesworth Station, and I dug up a bunch of like 100-year-old clams and things like that. And when I go on trips, I find cast deer antlers, or just going to like some shops and seeing something that I really like, and then buying it, taking it home to put in my own museum, or actually just around my house, because I live on a lifestyle block, so there's lots of old artifacts and things there that I find.
What part of Canterbury are you in?
North Canterbury.
Nice.
Defton.
Yeah. So you're finding lots of fossils too, I guess. Have you got more skilled at knowing what you're looking for?
Yes. I've read lots of books, like the NZ Fossil Hunter's Guide, and now I'm a little bit more on tune to see what's what in the natural world.
What's your advice for people starting out collecting, and particularly perhaps younger people, kids starting out collecting, because it's kind of hard to know where to start? What have you learned?
Well, first of all, if you're collecting and you're really passionate about collecting, keep with it, keep going, back yourself. And if you're not sure where to start or what to do, go to the museum and you might get a little bit of inspiration there. And you can watch lots of things online and read lots of books and talk to people around you who might know something. And, get a little bit more.
How extensive is your own collection at home? Have you got a room or a space that it's in that you're organising, like your own private museum?
I have a box, first of all, that I have lots of little rocks and gems and things in. Another one where I keep lots of fossils, like ammonites and squid fossils and things like that. And then I got a big shelf in my shed where everything, like big things like chains and pottery and horseshoes and antlers and things, that's where all the big stuff goes.
We'll talk in a moment about your relationship with the museum. I know you dedicated the book to the staff who've helped you there. But let's just talk about how you refined things to produce this book. You mentioned the school project. What was the subject that got you started, and what was to become a book?
It's very related to the book. it was to find three really cool animals that have defining physical qualities. And when I went to look for some of this stuff, because I already had an interest in things like this, so this is a project that I was taking a little bit more seriously, I already had a lot of animals in mind. But when I started to look into books and online and going to museum trips there, I started to notice more and more of these things. And once I was getting really into it, it was very, very hard for me to stop. So I just kept going one thing after another, and then by the end of it, it was starting to look a lot like a book.
What about just researching facts and refining facts? It's also a case sometimes of having too much information, isn't it? What sort of guided you in getting the book ready for editing?
Can you please repeat that question?
Well, it's just so much information, as you were saying. What was your experience, I guess, of writing and refining the material before it went for editing? Did you sort of organise it in your own mind?
I went from like a little kind of like chapters, where I go from one thing like maybe tusks then to antlers, and when you look into it, you find like 100 things which had really cool tusks. So for me, I just had to select the best of the best, and then the ones that are most interesting to look at or interesting to read about, and those are the ones that I put in the book.
The images are very important as well, and is this where the museum was also very helpful? Where have you sourced them from?
All over the place. Some of my dad's friends were really supportive, especially the museum, who opened up their archives for me, so I could get pictures with some of their behind-the-scenes stuff, which is something that I will never forget as long as I live. And Weta Digital, Mr. Nick Keller, donated a tremendous image of a Haast eagle.
Stay with us, James. Paul Schofield, I bring you in now, Senior Curator, Natural History. This has been a mutually very beneficial project, clearly. Just tell me a little bit more about the staff's experience of James and his skills and talents.
Well, yes, of course, the museum, you know, has had its collections built up for the last 150 years. And one of the most exciting things about our museum is the way that it can foster this sort of enthusiasm in people. On a weekly basis, I guess I have young people bring in fossils and other things for their identification. But it would be true to say that very few of the people that bring things in have the level of enthusiasm that James has. But it's really a bit of a very nostalgic for me, and indeed for the director of the museum, Anthony Wright, who both started our careers in exactly the same way as James, by visiting museums and getting that inspiration both from the exhibits and from the curators at the time, who actually pretty much spurred us into the careers that we now have today. So I'm super keen on the idea that James may well replace me one day.
What is your take, Paul? I suppose we presume, because of this extraordinary technology that we have these days, that places to go and see physical artefacts will sort of fall off the agenda for new generations. Is that what is happening, or far from it?
I feel that the real object has always got a place in both education and inspiration. Of course, our exhibit that we currently have on, showcasing the taxidermy that has in the museum, is actually something that is not exactly a PC in today's modern climate. I mean, many of those animals were killed specifically for exhibition or for hunting. But the museum still has a way of getting real objects from animals that have died naturally from museums and from zoos in particular. So we certainly will always have a niche where we are able to to show the real thing. But we're also getting more and more into 3D technology to actually both show things online and even in 3D exhibitions within the museum. So it's a mixture of things, really.
Sure. Fur, Fangs and Feathers is the new exhibition showcasing taxidermied animals. That's on at the museum, and James is booked to be launched there tomorrow. James, just looking at some of the amazing creatures in here, I was quite taken by the shark, the megalodon, is it? That's a decent set of jaws. And what would you say are one or two of the creatures that you've come across here in your theme, and the natural weapons, I guess, that animals have to hunt and to protect themselves? Which are some of your favourites?
Well, the megalodon, for a start, is definitely one of my favourites. The jaws, as you said, and the teeth, which are the size of a man's hand, are phenomenal for me to think about. But there's two others which are also my favourite. The Therizinosaurus, which was a 10-metre long dinosaur with claws almost a metre in length, the biggest claws of any animal that ever lived. But strangely enough, it was a plant eater. And the Smilodon, or saber-toothed tiger. Not really related to modern tigers. It's a heavily built ambush predator with fangs up to about 30 centimetres long, which are like the same length as my school ruler, which is insane to think about. But there's still lots that we don't know about them, which is kind of exciting for me.
So what's the plan now? Are there more books in you? I suspect there might be.
Yes, I have very, very strong ideas for some other books, but I would need to talk to Bateman Publishing.
You're not going to give me a sneak peek?
One of my ideas might be maybe Nature's Weird Weapons.
You should talk to our next guest, I suspect, Dr. Susie Wiles, about some of the glowing things that happen underwater. Might be of interest to you as well. Do you know what you're going to study later, James? It's interesting, isn't it? Straight away you think you'll be into your sciences, but you're a writer. Are you even bothering to think about it yet? Are you just going to take each adventure as it comes?
Yeah, I think that's the way it will come. I'm a little bit future-focused, but I want to encounter every adventure as it comes so that I'm not thinking about the next one and I can live the current one as best as it can be.
Well, brilliant advice for all of us right now. Thanks, well done, congratulations, and all the best for the next one. James Ryan, and speaking there also from the Canterbury Museum with Dr. Paul Schofield, Senior Curator, Natural History. Nature's Wildlife Weapons, written by James Ryan, is published by Bateman Books.